Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello and welcome to this special Holy Half Hour programme here on 3TFM, your local radio station. I'm your host, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church, and it's good to have your company. I promise that for the next 30 minutes, we will entertain you, move you, inspire you, even change you forever. We've a mixture of music and drama. The drama is provided by our live guests in the studio. They're all students or staff at our local college in Saltcoats, Adelaide Bible College on 9 Yard Street. So, hi guys, and thanks for coming to the studio today. So, how about introducing yourselves just briefly? Give me your name and something interesting about yourselves.
I'm Rachel and I play the cello.
I'm Kimberly and I play the bagpipes.
I'm Gary, I come from Derby.
I'm Frank and I have a dog named Benji.
I'm Roger and I play the trumpet.
So, let's get this show on the road. We start, appropriately enough, with a sketch about Adam and Eve. It's called The Fall.
What did God say?
He said we can eat the fruit from any tree in the garden, except one.
Which one?
That one, the one right in the middle.
Why not?
I don't know. Ask him yourself.
And what happens if we do eat the fruit off the tree in the middle? Not that I'm saying I'm thinking about it, you understand?
He said if you so as much touch it, you will die.
Why? Is it poisonous?
I don't know. I've never tried it.
Strange, isn't it? He gives us a beautiful garden, he gives us life, he provides lavishly for us, then at 99.9%, he suddenly changes his tune and says, "It's not for you, back off," and all for no apparent reason. Is he playing silly games with us?
I don't know.
Or is he just being awkward and showing who's boss?
Don't know.
Do you think it's because he knows something about the tree that we don't?
Don't know.
You don't know nothing?
Excuse me, folks, sorry to interrupt, but I couldn't help but hear your very interesting conversation. Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?
Well, it's not quite so bad as that. We can eat the fruit off any other tree in the garden, but not the fruit from that tree in the middle.
We can't understand it. That's the first time he has ever said no to us.
No doubt he has his reasons.
Like what?
Well, after all, he is a God Almighty, the boss, who must be obeyed. Maybe he's teaching you a lesson, showing you who is boss.
But we know he's the boss already. No need to rub our noses in it.
Well, he is God, and he is entitled to do whatever he wants. After all, it is his garden, his tree, his fruit, and we are his servants.
But I thought we had a better relationship with him than that.
Even if he is all-powerful, it isn't very nice to throw his power around in a bullying sort of way.
If there is something wrong with the fruit, maybe it's poisonous. Why doesn't he treat us like adults and explain things to us?
Well, you know what they say, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
But he's supposed to be loving and wise as well as all-powerful.
Then maybe it isn't a power thing after all.
What else could it be?
Maybe it's education.
Teaching us who's boss, you mean?
No, not quite. More of a test. A challenge. He's throwing out the spanner in your works to see what you will do. Don't assume that he really doesn't want you to eat it.
But he told us not to eat it.
And if we do, we will surely die.
You will not surely die. It won't kill you. It's nice fruit. Look at it.
No, but he will kill us.
No, he won't. He's not the murdering kind. He's loving and forgiving. He wouldn't hurt a fly. He just wants what is best for you. He wants you to take a little bit of initiative and to think for yourselves. To grow up from the toddler stage and do this and do that just because I say so.
But he did say so.
Don't you think you're being a tiny bit naive here, folks? What is it to God whether you eat the fruit or not? He's only thinking of you. He gave you brains. He wants you to use them. He gave you initiative. He wants you to use it. He wants you to take responsibility, to show maturity. In fact, he will admire you for it. He doesn't want robots. He wants folks who can take decisions and make choices.
But what if we make wrong choices?
God knows that this is the price of free will. He knows that if he gives you scope to make choices, you will not be experts the first time. He will cut you some slack. All in the cause of seeing you mature and grow and take personal responsibility.
It all sounds very deep to me. It's also complicated.
No, it's quite simple, really. Let me put it another way. In simple terms, what can possibly be wrong with eating apples?
I suppose so. They do look very ripe and juicy.
Yes, they are lovely. But this is not really about apples. This is more about you getting an eye-opener, an experience, a life-changing moment, a eureka moment, an epiphany. You see, there comes a time in everyone's life when the penny drops and suddenly you make a discovery. The apple falls on your head and you go, wow, that's gravity. You eat the apple and then you go, wow, now I understand good and evil and the difference between them. Then you will be like God. You will be as he designed you to be. What could possibly be wrong with having your eyes opened, with knowing good from evil, with being like God, with taking personal responsibility, with being an autonomous agent rather than a robot or toddler? These signs keep off the tree, off the children and immature folk, not for the likes of you. This tree and its apples represents your passport to mature adulthood.
Adam and Eve eat the fruit. Eve first, then she hands one to Adam. They eat with ambivalent feelings, including fear and trepidation, curiosity, boldness, guilt, waiting for they know not what, savouring the taste.
It just tastes like an ordinary apple.
What did you expect?
I don't feel any different.
Nor me, it's an anticlimax.
Of course, these are just ordinary apples, they're not magic apples. The power of the experience lies not in the apples, but in your brave decision to eat them.
How do you mean?
Well, think about it. You have eaten apples before, but this is the first time you have consciously weighed up what God has said to you. How do you feel about that?
I'm not sure.
I'm feeling a bit funny about this whole thing.
Is the apple rotten?
No, but maybe we are. It doesn't feel good to disobey God.
God comes.
I certainly don't feel very liberated, enlightened or better in any way.
Give it time, it takes practice. Maturity is a gradual process.
I feel funny too, it's making me shiver.
Are you feeling cold?
No, I'm feeling guilty, I feel exposed. God will see right through us and what we've done.
I'm getting shivers too. Come on, let's get something to cover us and let's think of some excuse for God.
God comes.
Adam? Eve? Where are you? Oh, there you are. What are you doing?
Hiding. I heard you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid.
Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from?
The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it.
Oh, so it's her fault and my fault, is it? So what is this you have done, Eve?
The serpent deceived me and I ate.
So it's his fault, is it? Serpent, what have you done?
Don't blame me. I didn't do nothing. I didn't eat your fruit. I didn't force them to eat your apples. They saw the fruit was juicy looking. They did the picking. They did the eating. They managed it all by themselves. They do have minds of their own.
Yes, I know how you operate. You supply the guns and bullets, but they pull the trigger themselves. You supply the reasons they were looking for to justify disobeying me, you snake. No doubt you gave them your usual spiel about standing on their own 2 feet, making adult decisions for themselves, being mature and grown up. You've talked them into appointing themselves as judge and jury over me, of weighing up and evaluating my commands as if they have a choice of obeying or disobeying. You encourage them to play God. You provoke them into wanting to be self-controlling, self-sufficient, self-centred, not responsible to anyone else, nor even me. You, of all people, should know from bitter personal experience that pride comes before a fall. Crawl away out of my sight. You will be forever the sneaky, sleek-eyed, slippery serpent synonymous with sin. As for you two, why did you even speak to him? Why didn't you speak to me? Why did you moan and groan when you were in the lap of luxury, the beautiful Garden of Eden? And why is a command so hard to swallow? Why don't you trust me? Why would you think that you know better than me? Don't you know that pride comes before a fall? That seeking freedom you tie yourself in knots? That in judging me you condemn yourselves? Don't you know that I love you? I created you in love. I provide you with everything you enjoy. I'm more willing to give than you are to ask. I'm more willing to forgive than you are to say sorry. I'm willing to bless you more than you can think or imagine. I'm willing to die for you, and one day you will be the death of me. I don't want to be God without you. I do not deny you good things, and even when I say no, it is in love, like parents who don't allow their kids to play with matches and razor blades. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Don't cut off the branch you're sitting on. Even a wayward puppy soon learns that coming to heel is in his own best interest. Even a bird with a broken wing realises its capture is its best chance of flying again. Even a seagull knows where its bread is buttered. But not prodigal sons and daughters, it seems. Well, go on then. Go into your far country if you must. But when you come home with your tail between your legs, yes, come running to me, and I will be running to meet you. Well, let's get a piece of music to match that. This is from the Deep River Boys. It's Adam Never Had No Mammy.
I heard the old folks talking round my house the other night about Adam in the scriptures long ago. Now the lady folks, they abused him, said they knowed it wasn't right. And of course the men folks, they all said that so. Now I felt sorry for Mr. Adam, and I felt like butting in, 'cause I know more than they do all about what made Adam sin. For Adam never had no mommy, for to take him on her knee, to teach him right from wrong and show him things he ought to see. I know down in my heart that he'd let that apple be, but Adam never had no dear old mommy. Adam never had no childhood round the old low cabin door. He never had no good old southern life. He started in a great big grown-up man, and what is more, he never had the right kind of a wife. Now just suppose he'd had a mommy when that tempting did begin, and she had come and told him, son, don't you eat that, it's a sin. But for to take him on her knee, to teach him right from wrong and show him things he ought to see. I know down in my heart that he'd let that apple.
You're listening to the Holy Half Hour on 3TFM with myself and with members of the Adelaide College. Our next sketch is entitled How Christmas, or indeed How the World Began. Long before the world was created, God was chewing over in his mind what he would and wouldn't do. So this is a conversation within the mind of God, between God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. It might have gone something like this.
So shall I create the world or not?
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Why should we? Then again, why not?
Well, there is much to be said on both sides.
We don't have to.
No, we don't have to do anything.
And we do already have a splendid unity and fellowship within ourselves.
It's not like we're lonely or anything.
But it would be nice to find another outlet for our infinite love.
As God the Father, I would like to have children to love.
As God the Son, you have me.
And me.
Yes, of course. But we have such a perfect unity of love already. Don't you fancy a new challenge?
In what way?
Like loving less than perfect creatures.
We could love the unlovely, heal the brokenhearted, support the weak.
I didn't know you were a compulsive rescuer.
And if you didn't create them, there wouldn't be need to be any ugly, broken-hearted weaklings.
We could love the ugly into becoming beautiful. Frogs could turn into princes.
It would give us quite a buzz to comfort the sad and help people to be all they could be.
I could enable them to do things they dare not even dream about.
Wouldn't it be fun to have millions of partners, co-creators, channels of our love?
Not robots, but willing partners.
Yes, we could be covenant partners, wedded together by our boundless love.
We could work together as a team, human and divine.
They could be our hands and our feet and our voice.
They could be the channels of our love to one another.
True, but what if they don't play along with us?
What if they rebel against us?
If you give them real choices, they might make wrong choices.
They will not be so wise as us, so there is a good chance they will make mistakes. In fact, you could be sure of it.
But that need not be the end of the world.
No, people can learn from their mistakes.
But mistakes can cost a lot, an awful lot.
But surely we could redeem the situation somehow.
How?
We can teach them and guide them and inspire them.
We could give them scriptures and prophets.
Give them teachers and preachers.
We could send them angels and signs.
We could give them brains to think and hearts to feel.
We could make them sensitive to our promptings.
But what if they still get lost? Fall, fail, blow it.
I could be the good shepherd seeking out his lost sheep.
And I could open their eyes and hearts to respond to you.
Love hurts. To have creatures to care for will cost. It is sacrificial.
We know that, but love is prepared to pay the cost. I'm ready to sacrifice myself.
And I'm right behind you. I will breathe new life into dry bones.
So, is that agreed? We shall create man and women in our own image. In other words, like ourselves, able to give and to receive love, both human and divine love.
And if they fall, I mean when they fall, I will go and pick them up.
And I will teach them to walk better the next time.
So how shall we go about it?
I'll go down to the earth and get alongside them and show them the error of their ways and how life should be lived.
You will need me to make sure they get the message.
We can prepare the way by giving scriptures and prophecies.
I will not blind them by my holy light, but I'll come alongside them in a way that they can relate to. I know. I will come into the world in exactly the same way that they do, by being born as a baby.
The danger then is that they underestimate you and think you are just another human baby. We need to do something special. I know, we'll arrange angels to announce your birth, wise men to act as witnesses, and a star to show them the way to go. We could also get some humble shepherds to witness the arrival of the Good Shepherd.
I am sure we can get through to them and show them that we exist and that we love them.
And by my sacrificial suffering, I will expose their sinfulness and dent their high opinion of themselves.
We will show them just how much they crucify us every day.
We will absorb the hurt and return love for hate. We will forgive them.
We will bounce back from everything they throw at us, including death.
And we will put a new spirit in them. Christmas will be their birth too.
Thank you.
Here's another sketch. It's about the feeding of the 5,000. It's the miracle of the loaves and fish.
Would you like to take a picnic lunch with you, son?
No, I won't need it.
I think you will if you're going to be a long time with Jesus.
Okay then, please yourself.
Would you like a fishy sandwich?
Have we not got anything better?
No, son, that's all we've got. I can't do miracles, you know.
Okay, Mum, that'll have to do.
I see, folks, it's lunchtime, and we can't live by spiritual food alone, so let's stop and have some lunch.
Psst, Master, we have no food at all. Whatever shall we do? I haven't got a clue.
Trust me, and go look for whatever food has been bought.
I see a young lad over there. Maybe he has some to spare.
I see. Bring him over to me.
Okay, but what's the point with so many mouths to feed? Hello, son, I see you've brought some food. It looks very, very good.
It's not my cup of tea, but it's something.
Would you like to give it to Jesus to share with all these people?
It's only 5 slices of loaf and 2 fish.
I know it won't be enough, but it's a start.
Can I keep some of it for myself?
I'm not sure that this is right, you know.
What's wrong with bringing the lad to Jesus?
Well, I wonder if Jesus is child safeguarded.
Jesus loves the little children.
And has anyone got a hygiene certificate or a license to distribute food?
Aye, right, there's always one.
Listen, Jesus, you've taken my son's lunch. I made it for him myself.
I know, but it's in a good cause.
I don't want my son to go hungry.
I think he'll be all right. There's enough and even 12 baskets left over.
What's wrong with my fish sandwiches?
Nothing, it's just the crowd of fussy eaters.
So the miracle of the loaves and fish, the fishy sandwiches, is the fact that in spite of everyone's negativity, there was a positive outcome.
What will we do to feed this crowd? Where will we go? I don't know. Listen to me, is what Jesus said. Make the people sit down, don't worry your head. Andrew comes up, he say, now see what I found. A lad with his lunch, but that won't go round. Listen to me, is what Jesus said. Make the people sit down, I'll provide bread. 5 loaves and 2 small fish. 5 loaves and 2 small fish. It may not look a lot on the dish, but when Jesus said the grace, they all had full plates. When Jesus said the grace, they all had full plates. Taking the bread, saying a prayer, passing it around, but it don't disappear. People are eating as much as they can, then they whisper together, who is this man? 5 loaves and 2 small fish. 5 loaves and 2 small fish. It may not look a lot on the dish, but when Jesus said the grace, they all had full plates. When Jesus said the grace, they all had full plates.
Now, our next sketch is to do with the end of Jesus' life. So just imagine there's the hill of Calvary, there's the 3 crosses, and here's the tour guide.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, we're now outside the ancient city walls in the middle of a busy thoroughfare. People are going about their daily business, buying, selling, discussing the latest news, meeting friends. It's quite the hive of activity. It's coming up to noon, so in a moment we shall be stopping for lunch. But you might be interested to know that there's a little bit more excitement than usual, because there's about to be a public execution. These occasional events do attract some attention, and they appeal to those who like their soaps to have a bit of blood and guts. If you feel this may spoil your lunch, then please come away now. But those of you with a more voyeuristic inclination may like to stay and watch.
What do you think?
Not me. It would make me sick. I vote for a sharp exit and some fast food.
I thought we were more enlightened nowadays. Whatever happened to Roman civilization? There are even children here. This is not good viewing for anyone. It is dehumanising. It's a disgrace.
But you don't know what the criminals have done. Maybe they deserve whatever is coming to them.
Nobody deserves the death penalty.
Don't you mean that some people may deserve the death penalty, but that the state should not give them what they deserve, because it's less murderous and barbarous than they are?
No, if they do the crime, they should suffer the consequences. The state has the right, indeed the duty, to punish them.
If they must execute, why do it here, though, in full view of everyone? They couldn't have picked a busier place.
But that's the whole point. It's a deterrence, so they want as many people as possible to see it and be put off ever thinking about becoming criminals.
They do look like a miserable trio.
Not surprising, really, given the circumstances, is it?
I wonder what they've done.
As I understand it, those two are thieves, and the other one is a bit of a celebrity.
So celebrities get crucified by the public here as well, do they?
How do you mean celebrity? Is he a notorious criminal?
No, nothing like that.
Well, why is he about to get killed? He must have done something terrible.
That's the funny thing. He's famous in this country for healing the sick, the blind, the lame, the deaf, lepers, a paralysed man. Huge crowds of followers up hillsides to hear him preach and teach his famous parables. They even claim that he fed 5,000 of his hearers on one occasion with just 5 loaves and 2 fish. He walked on water, apparently, calmed a storm on the Sea of Galilee with a word of command to the wind and the waves. And my favourite one is, they say that he even raised the dead.
Raised the dead? Get away.
If he's such a good egg all round, why is he in this pickle now? What's the catch with Mr. Perfect?
Well, you see those guys over there, the ones with the self-righteous smug grins. They're called Pharisees. They're the leading Jews, experts in the law of Moses. They're the folk who brought him to trial. They say that he broke the sacred law of God in many ways. For instance, he broke the Sabbath law.
How did he do that?
Apparently he allowed his disciples to pick some grains of wheat as they walked through a field.
Ooh, as bad as that.
To the Pharisees, picking grains is harvesting and harvesting is work, and work is not allowed on the Sabbath. And to break one aspect of the law is the same as breaking any other aspect of the law. It makes you a lawbreaker. They don't go much on graded grains of lawbreaking.
That's rich, given that it was graded grains that got him into trouble in the first place.
He also broke the Old Testament law, according to the Pharisees, by healing the sick on the Sabbath.
So is healing work too?
Yes, in their book. Actually, the way they see it, you can stop it getting worse, but you can't make it get better until the Sabbath is over.
I'm starting to sympathise with this guy.
I'm thinking that it's maybe the Pharisees who need executing.
Hold on a minute. We don't know all the facts. There must be more to it.
Well, I'm noticing that it's not the Pharisees who are executing the criminals. It's the Roman soldiers. They wouldn't do it for no reason. They wouldn't do it just to please the Pharisees. They pride themselves on bringing justice all around the world.
You're right there. In fact, the Romans really dislike the troublesome Pharisees. The Jews give them a lot of trouble. There's no way the Romans would like to do what the Pharisees want them to do.
So why are the Romans involved?
Because as the supreme power in Palestine, only they have the legal authority to execute. The Pharisees can find criminals guilty, but they need the Romans to carry out the execution. Don't quote me on this, but I understand that a bit of shenanigans was going on. Reliable sources tell me that the Pharisees found the man, Jesus, that's his name, guilty of breaking holy laws by Sabbath breaking, not fasting, and blasphemy, etc. But when they went to the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, they took a different tack and said that they found him guilty of treason against Rome, inciting revolution and rebellion, claiming to be a rival king of a rival kingdom, and that sort of thing.
Did the Romans not put him on trial themselves to find out the truth?
Yes, they did. In fact, at one point Pilate asked him, "What is the truth?" I wasn't there, but I hear that Jesus was very silent. He hardly spoke. He didn't seem interested in defending himself. It even ended up that Pilate clearly thought that he was innocent and was trying his best to find a loophole to get him off the hook. Well, Jesus didn't seem to care. Pilate tried to wash his hands of the whole affair, but in the end, he gave permission for the execution.
What I don't understand is why the crowd are so bitter. Why are they shouting and screaming, swearing and spitting at this Jesus?
That's just what they do at executions.
And wrestling matches.
No, it's more than that. There are 3 guys up there, but it's Jesus who's incurring all the wrath. And by the sound of it, he's the least guilty of them all.
And notice that Jesus is saying nothing, doing nothing, but everyone else has an axe to grind. Everyone has passionate feelings. Everyone is focused on him. There is a tornado of hate and he is the eye of the storm.
I don't know about you, but it's beginning to spook me out.
I know what you mean. This is no ordinary, everyday execution of 3 criminals.
This is something really big. I don't know what it all means, but I do know it's something earth-shattering.
Funny you should say that. I'm sure I can feel the tremors of an earthquake starting. And isn't it getting eerily dark, given it's the middle of the day?
Let's get out of here. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of this.
Well, thank you very much to all of you members of Adelaide College. That's thanks to Roger, Frank, Rachel, Kim and Gary. I appreciate your help with all these sketches. And our Holy Half Hour's run its course, so we have to say bye for now. And I'll leave you with the Doncaster Wheatsheaf Girls Choir singing, Were You There?